The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, too often you need to save me from myself. How are you?
I was just going to say, moving swiftly on, Howard. Good morning, Boker Tov. It's one of those dusty days Israel, one of those that you came to love and respect while you were here. A sharav is blowing in, the desert winds will be blowing, the sand will be around. So it's one of those days. But interestingly, President Herzog has called the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. He's also been in touch with the acting president or the deputy president of the UAE. He's been in contact also. He's had contact from the president of Turkey, President Erdogan. He has spoken to people, first of all, to congratulate them, to wish them greetings for Eid al-Fitr, which the Muslims are celebrating yesterday and today. He also, interestingly, had a contact from President Erdogan, who wished him congratulations on Israel's Independence Day, which, will, of course, will be later this week. But the significance of the call that President Herzog has made to the Dubai Crown Prince and also to the president of the Palestinian Authority, of course, comes on the back of what was a rather troublesome month of Ramadan, with lots and lots of unrest in Jerusalem, and those leaders coming out being critical of Israel, Israel's handling of events on the Temple Mount in particular. And so President Herzog has tried to smooth over that a little bit. The tensions seem to, at least for now, have gone down a little, and President Herzog trying to use his diplomatic skills in order to somehow smooth over things. And so, you know, he's, I think, doing a relatively good job. For me, it sometimes surprises me to what extent the Israeli president does become involved in political issues. He's supposed to be non-political, apolitical. Of course, he does come from a political background, as indeed have previous presidents. But it's become more and more accepted for the president to become involved in political issues of the day. Now, I know that it's done with the cooperation of the prime minister and with the cooperation of the diplomatic corps, the foreign ministry, so he's not going off on his own track. But the presidential role, which I always saw once as a very ceremonial role, I think has become a lot more important in recent years, with the president being a slightly higher authority that more difficult things can be referred to in the event that it's needed. It's almost like an escalation point. Mm-hmm. When things become difficult between the leaders, you know, the president can roll in and somehow smooth things over. So that's certainly what he's been trying to do over the past few days.
Not simple at all. Nor is this. The Russian foreign minister has been accused of anti-Semitism following recent comments that he made about the Ukrainian president. So we just spoke to the head of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies. But this has become a massive international storm, hasn't it?
This has become a big issue, and I apologize if I'm covering ground that you've already discussed. I'm just going to go over the facts as they are again, and then, of course, I would love people to let me know what they think about this. But the point was that the Russian President Sergei Lavrov, who is in Italy and was conducting an interview with an Italian TV channel, this already took place on Sunday. He made the comment, let's put the context into place. The war that Russia is waging in Ukraine has, amongst other things, been based upon Russia's claim that there are Nazi elements in Ukraine that need to be done away with, and that the Ukrainian government not only is not doing enough to suppress them, but the Russians claim that the Ukrainian government is actually somehow supporting the Nazi elements that are present in Ukraine. Now, that is the pretext, or has been the pretext, for the war, and hence the Russian foreign minister decided that he needed to raise this again during his visit to Italy by saying that the fact that The Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has Jewish blood in him, doesn't negate the fact that there are Nazi elements in his country, and by inference doesn't negate his support of these Nazi elements, because as far as the Russians are trying to present things at the moment, at least, as far as many people, in fact, like to view things, Nazism is all about anti-Semitism and has no other kind of role. And so it seems a little difficult to understand that someone who has Jewish blood, Jewish links, Jewish ancestry can in any way support Nazism. It seems to be an antithesis that people can't put together. So in order to try and justify why the two can in fact fit together, Lavrov goes on to say, I believe that Adolf Hitler also had Jewish blood. That's the link that he tries to draw. Of course, this has gone down like a lead balloon, to say the least. And in fact, not only has Israel's foreign minister Yair Lapid weighed in on the issue, but in fact, it's also solicited comments from the United States administration in the form of Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who also said that this kind of rhetoric is really not only unnecessary but unacceptable. And the question is, what is the wider implication? Is this something that's really just a Jewish thing coming out of Lavrov? Is this something that is really pointed towards Israel? Because we've seen in recent weeks that the relationship between Israel and Russia has suffered somewhat, because Israel has been less and less supportive of Russia's activities in Ukraine. This potentially could be a significant turning point in Russia's relationship with Israel in general, and in particular with reference to the Ukrainian war, because as Russia conducts this activity of sort of alienating Israel more and more, we see that Israel is falling more and more into line with supporting Ukraine in its efforts against Russia, falling into line with the international community, with the Western world, in supporting Ukraine more and more. So whereas Israel initially started with, you know, helping medically and setting up field hospitals and things like that, I think that we're seeing Israel becoming more and more involved in the military exercise itself, rather than trying to play an honest broker mediation role and trying to stay as impartial as possible between Russia and Ukraine, while clearly in the background wishing to support Ukraine, but refraining from doing so for fear of damaging relations with Russia. But I think that these relations are being damaged by the Russians themselves, to the point that Israel eventually will say, we have little to lose now in going all in with Ukraine. What do you guys think about these comments that were made by Lavrov? I'd be interested to hear if there are people who have views about whether you think it's purely anti-Semitic, whether this is something pointed towards Israel, whether it doesn't have an anti-Semitic element to it. It's interesting to hear how people have interpreted it.
So certainly our listeners seem to think that it most certainly is anti-Semitic. Mark Luber saying the word blood that he used, Hitler had Jewish blood, ties in with the Christian ideology of using Christian child blood for Pesach Matzah, therefore Jewish blood must be revenged. So there's definitely the use of the word blood that is problematic. So it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is from Russia, if any. But nevertheless, there is certainly a massive storm around these comments, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me the interesting thing is to see where this takes the relationship between Israel and Russia. If it takes it down, you know, a dead end path where things become damaged, and how this affects the relationship with Russia, particularly on the Syrian border, or whether somehow we manage to surf over this. Do we want to? I mean, the question is, should Israel accept this to some degree? In other words, I mean, I think that Yair Lapid has made his statements. He's made clear how Israel views those comments And of course, particularly in these days when we are memorializing those who fell during the Shoah, and of course we fall into Yom HaZikaron, we'll talk a little bit about that later. These days when we think about anti-Semitism and anti-Israeli activity and the lives that have been lost in trying to protect ourselves and protect our heritage, these comments of course come and are very very, very difficult to stomach, particularly in these days. But the question is whether we hold some sort of an ongoing grudge and it damages ongoing relationships, or whether somehow this resolves itself and we can return to some cordiality in the relationship with Russia. And the question is whether that's even desirable in light of what's going on. You know, is this what we want? Is this what's in the best interests of Israel and the Jewish people? Or should we stand up and say, up to here, you know, we're not prepared to accept anymore?
Really, really amazing. It'll be interesting to see. Three people in a home for disabled in Holon have died after suspected food poisoning. How did this happen?
Yeah, this is just a very, very sad and tragic story about a home for special needs people in Holon, and the fact that on Saturday night, some of them felt bad, started to suffer from diarrhea. One woman passed out and apparently died quite soon after that. Two other people have also subsequently died. There are suspicions of food poisoning. The Ministry of Health has already been in to found a defect in the home's kitchen. They've opened up an investigation. Certainly no intention on the part of the people who are running this home for disabled people. Yeah. I think it's more about negligence rather than about bad intention. But of course, negligence is also a responsibility of the people who run the place. And it kind of just fits in a little bit, unfortunately, to our chocolateless situation that we find ourselves in Israel at the moment, with so many chocolates and chocolate-related items having been recalled due to the salmonella outbreak that took place in the Strauss Elite factory. Even the Aroma coffee chain, which is so well known for its little chocolates that it serves with coffee, is currently running without chocolates, something which we've never experienced. Even on Pesach, you get little Pesach ticker chocolates with the little Chag Pesach Sameach written on it. It's so part of the fabric, and now you go to Aroma and no chocolates. So we are definitely suffering, but unfortunately, this particular event in Holon, a lot more serious, and unfortunately, people who already suffered from medical issues before this took place, three people have already passed away, lots and lots of attention being drawn to this particular place, unfortunately, and we hope that it'll be repaired in the very, very near future indeed.
Let's hope that is the case. Hamas has claimed responsibility for the area, for the Ariel terror attack. What message is Hamas sending?
Well, this is a very strange thing for me, because on the one hand, whenever these terror attacks take place, we see multitude of organizations leaping up to take responsibility for having carried out the attack. And the reason that they like to jump up is to pander to their own support group, to say, we are active, we are doing things, we are taking action on the ground, we will not allow things just simply to happen, and we want to be viewed as having been the instigators of this action in order to somehow draw support from their own local support base. Very frequently, these are fringe groups that operate within either the Palestinian Authority area or within Gaza. They generally jump up to take responsibility. We less see Hamas wanting to take responsibility for all of these terror attacks, because of course for Hamas the consequences could be much more significant. Mm-hmm. The IDF could quite easily take action, as they generally do every time there's some sort of an incident that emanates from Gaza, or some sort of a terror attack. The IDF hold Hamas in Gaza responsible, and they inevitably carry out either air force or artillery attacks against Hamas targets in Gaza. So by Hamas standing up and taking responsibility for this, I think that this sends a very, very clear message at this stage, which is slightly contrary to the message that we've been receiving from Hamas, and in particular from interlocutors in Egypt, who are constantly talking to the Hamas representatives and, of course, relaying information to Israel. Because the message that we've been getting up until now is that Hamas is not interested in a war, in a conflict of any sort, that Hamas is interested in trying to maintain a peace and security as much as is currently possible, within the bounds, of course, of Hamas continuing to be seen to be active in their opposition to Israel in order to pander to their own local community. But Hamas, but by Hamas standing up and saying, this was our attack, and what's more, this is not the last one. We are going to continue to carry out attacks like this. This is something of a declaration of an intention of conflict. This is contrary to the message that we want things to be peace and quiet. This is almost like a declaration of war to say, you know, we're not going to fire missiles from over the border as we've been, as has commonly been the case in the past. Now we're going to start carrying out terror attacks within Israel itself. So I think this is a significant moment, and I certainly hope that it doesn't mean that we're moving into a period of increased terrorism within Israel. We've already suffered over the last few weeks and months a number of terror attacks, and we were happy to see that things were somewhat calming down after all of that. So we will have to be on our guard very much in the coming weeks, especially as we move now into Yom HaTzma'ut over the next few days. And of course, we celebrate like Ba'omer next week, and then we're rolling on towards Shavuot. As we move through these holiday periods, we'll have to be very much on our guard. And I'm sure that the Israeli security forces will be doing a massive job in order to keep us all secure.
Anthony, before I let you go, Yom HaZikaron begins this evening. How is this marked in Israel?
Well, it's a very solemn day. The sirens will blare out this evening at 8 o'clock in Israel. That equates to 7 o'clock your time in South Africa. We will all stand to a minute silence this evening. There will also be a siren tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about that in our discussion tomorrow morning. But certainly this evening, I would very much encourage people to participate in the marking of Yom HaZikaron, to light a candle, to remember those who have fallen in Israel's wars and those who have been victims of terror, because the day has been expanded in recent years to cover people who have been victims of terror. Quite a number of Israelis' names have been added to the list over the last year or so. We can discuss a little bit more about that tomorrow. But I think there is always this kind of question as to how Yom HaZikaron pertains to Jews who are in the diaspora. This seems to be a very local Israeli thing about Israeli soldiers, about people who have been victims of terror in Israel. Why does it have an impact on Jews in the diaspora? And at least I have the view, which I'd like to express, which you can agree or disagree with, but I have the view that whatever happens in Israel has an impact on the ability of Jews in the diaspora to function in freedom as Jews, to live lives freely as Jews, and to the extent that Israel suffers and Israel pays a price and Israel has to enter into a conflict or a war in order to protect ourselves, to protect our country, and to protect our Jewish heritage, it has an impact on Jews in the diaspora as well. And so for that reason, I would very much like to call upon all the listeners to participate, to take a moment to think, to light a candle, to stand in silence when the sirens blare out this evening. And the ceremony will take place at the Kotel this evening to memorialize those more than 24,000 people who've been killed in Israel's wars since 1860. And we'll discuss a little bit more about what that means for us tomorrow.
Absolutely right, and I do agree with you 100%. It is 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. That was Anthony Reich with the Israel Report. We'll catch Anthony tomorrow, where we will be focusing on Yom HaZikaron, Day of Remembrance.